On another very exciting entry of Animation Deliberation, we are covering the long-awaited and anticipated Pixar's Lightyear. And we have a very special guest to be joining us to do that. We will get right into that after some ads we have no say over whatsoever. Sing along if you know the words. A 1, 2, 3, it's time for Animation Deliberation. A conversation and a celebration of our favorite action animated series. Yeah. All right, folks, welcome back to Animation Deliberation, the podcast that takes action animation and cartoons seriously, but not too seriously. And folks, we have seen, we have experienced the 2022 film Pixar's Lightyear, and we are excited to talk all about that. I'm your host, J. Scotty St. Clair, and with me are my stalwart co-hosts, Zuhair Ali.
Hello, hello.
Welcome, welcome. As well as Andrew Rogers.
Hello, I'm excited to be a space cadet this week. Let's go.
Sweet. And as we mentioned, a very special guest. She has appeared on Stranded Panda shows like Avengers Assemble, as well as the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast, where she is instrumental in making the Fantasy League happen. We have with us Sarah Day McDougall. Welcome to the show.
I am so excited to talk about this movie.
Well, on that note, you sound very excited. As the guest, I will give you the floor first of all. What did you, without getting too spoilery, what are your impressions of this film?
Well, let me just say this. My husband told me he knew I would cry during the movie, but he did not think it would be 2 seconds in.
Same here, don't worry.
I think I loved every minute from that point on.
All right, very good. And as for Zuhair and myself, I know when we did our most anticipated for 2022, Lightyear topped the list for us. So with that being said, I will let Andrew Rogers go next, even though I know you were very excited for this film as well as we continued to ramp up towards it.
Yeah, no, I got more excited as time went on, and I really enjoyed this movie. You know, it had so many things going for it. I walked in expecting to have a lot of fun, and that's exactly what I got. You know, I know there are some people out there who aren't the most positive about this film, but like, I just enjoyed it for being a fun thing. It might not be Pixar's best work, but Pixar's worst work is still better than a lot of other studios, and I think this just shows how good Pixar does things. So yeah, I absolutely adored this. It brought me right back to being a kid watching the original Toy Stories again. So
100%.
How could I not have that fun?
Indeed. All right, and Zuhair, as our resident Buzz Lightyear of Star Command aficionado and cheerleader, what did you think about this movie? I know you were very excited about it, but had some hesitations, especially with the inclusion of a certain character. How are you feeling about this?
Yeah, I mean, everything was visually stunning. The voice actors were great. The comedy was great. Action was a lot of fun. Everything just looked beautiful, felt beautiful. But I put it, I guess it didn't quite meet my expectations.
Okay.
Not only because of how said character was treated, but I'll get into the spoiler stuff later. Overall, it was a great movie. I really enjoyed it. I was too excited and didn't hit the expectation.
Okay. Yeah. As for myself, I think I echo a little bit of what everybody has said so far. I really had a great time in the theaters. I've seen it twice, so I obviously enjoyed it enough to see it a second time. But I will say, I think the second viewing really enhanced it for me. I agree with you, Zuhair. I think my expectations might have been a little lofty on my first viewing. So right now I'm sitting around like an 8 out of 10. I think it's a great character piece on Buzz Lightyear. I think it's a great summer blockbuster. But one thing you said, Andrew, is like maybe it doesn't reach the heights of like Pixar's best. And I think I agree with that a lot. I didn't think it packed the emotional wallop that I was expecting that Pixar films often do. But all that being said, I can only praise the animation, the voice acting. The story was pretty riveting for the most part. So I'm coming away pretty satisfied.
I do have to say, before we get too into this, that Sarah Day is wearing a really awesome Buzz Lightyear shirt that we're going to have to get a picture of to put on the socials later. Because
oh, definitely.
I have a family photo to send.
Cool. Amazing. Sweet. Yeah.
Just to get that out there before I forgot.
And I was going to say, again, not getting spoilery yet, I think you're wrong, J. Scotty, not saying it didn't pack the emotional punch, because I don't know if I've cried this much at any movie except for Up. I think Up is the only other contender.
Wow.
And there were some reminiscent things of the movie when we get into the spoiler portion. Like, I think those are the top two. I was a mess in the theater during parts of this
film. I'm so glad we're on the same page there. And I do want to say, I just saw the movie this morning. So my first time. I really haven't had time to sit and think about it. So I'm still on that, you know.
Well, those are the best reaction cast.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really excited to hear your thoughts, especially what you have to say, Zuhair, about this character. I don't even know who you're talking about. So I'm excited to have this conversation, hopefully see it again, and then see if my opinion changes. I don't think it will.
All right. Yeah. Well, then we won't waste any time. We'll go ahead and get into the spoilers. But I will say, I don't take umbrage with you saying that I'm wrong. There is emotion there for me, but it goes to show how different viewers are out there, because I'm probably going to ruffle a lot of feathers here, but I think Up is really overrated. It's one of the lesser Pixar films for me, definitely. Coco is the one that got me most recently. That's the one where I cried like a baby in the theater. And there certainly was a lot of emotion in this film, but it just wasn't. Even like Turning Red, that came out on Disney Plus earlier this year, I felt like just had a stronger emotional resonance for me personally.
Was that Pixar?
It was.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I suppose it's the word resonance versus punch. Like, this one just felt like it punched me.
Okay. Yeah. That's totally fair and legitimate.
So punched are we getting into spoilers? Because I want to say one thing at the top with spoilers.
Yeah, go for it.
I was right.
I didn't think I was going to be right. And the moment that movie started and it said, this is the movie Andy watched in theaters, I lost my mind.
Yeah.
My husband and I had talked about that. Like, we assumed this was the movie. But to see that on film, that this was Andy's favorite movie. And like, I grew up with Andy. Like, I was 5 when Andy was 5. When Toy Story 3 came out, I was in college when Andy was going to college. So I grew up with him. I'm seeing this movie with my daughter. It's her first movie experience. So that just like, I just lost it. And then, like I said, I was crying the rest of the time.
No, I'm delighted to hear you enjoyed it that much and it like meant that much to you. Like, because I was definitely excited for it and had a lot of fun with it. That's definitely a spoiler we can get out of the way. We had speculated whether or not the movie was taking place within like the larger Pixar universe, or if it was like a film within a film. And it turns out it was just that. We got the title card or the text right at the beginning that's like, in 1995, Andy Davis, I think his name was, wanted an action figure from his favorite movie. This is that movie. And as much as I appreciated that, getting that right out of the gate, again, I'm going to be a little critical here, but that's not because I didn't like the movie. I had a lot of fun with the movie, but I've just had time to kind of mull it over and wonder like what would have worked better or not. And then I can't help but think like if they had the time, if they could have like had a sequence where we saw Andy from Toy Story go to the movie theater, enter the movie theater, and then have like the title card come up or something like that. Or even in like terms of marketing, Andrew, you alluded to this film not being received. It seems like it's being received very well, but I have heard some criticism out there. And then the performance has been a little underwhelming. I think domestically it's clocking in right now. It's a 4-day weekend, but the last time I checked Box Office Mojo, it was around like 51 million, which is a little bit lower than expectations. It came in second place to Jurassic World Dominion. I wonder if that's a fault from marketing, if they had just used that line in the marketing and in the trailers, like, this is the movie that Andy saw. Maybe it would have made more sense to people about why it's not Tim Allen they're hearing, why it's Chris Evans stepping into the role.
There's so many things I need to say at once, but to add on to, like, if it would be great to see Andy, how great would it be if it's like you don't even see Andy's face, but it's like his little legs and he's holding his Woody toy as he's walking into the seat? Like that, and like him, like you can hear him eating popcorn, but it's like falling on the Woody doll. Like, that would have been great.
Just the little cowboy hat above a seat.
Yeah.
You never see the face.
Nice.
I would have loved that. The only thing, though, is I don't think he would have taken Woody because Woody was not familiar with the Buzz doll when we first
That's not a good call.
Other.
This is true.
Call. Right.
I would have loved to see Woody.
The hat was just over his eyes the whole time.
I want to, just a little disclaimer, my daughter also loves the Toy Story movies, so I have seen these things thousands of times. Not that I'm complaining, but I will notice a detail like that.
Yeah, so I do actually have a question for you. Mm-hmm. How did your daughter feel about this movie? Because when I was in the theater, there were only a couple of other young kids there, and a couple of them actually left because it almost seemed too intense at some points, and their parents were like, we're going to take them out. So I was just curious, did you see any of that? Because I'm wondering if that has to do with the performance of the movie.
I wish the kids in my theater left.
So she's two, and she was doing so well, was very into it until the end. When there was a big explosion and Zurg like popped out, like my mom saw it with us too. My mom, myself, and my daughter all jumped at that scene, and she was like, "That's it, I'm done watching it." But that was like at the end, so the last like 20 minutes or so. But up until that point, where she was terrified by Zurg, she was very into it and invested, just eating her popcorn, watching the movie.
Yeah. Well, on the subject of Zurg, Sarah Day, you had the question about who this character we were alluding to in terms of like Zuhair's hesitation. We'll just go ahead and say it was Zurg. And it was one of the biggest like twists in the movie. And I was really surprised like how much this movie kind of like borrowed from Interstellar. Like the whole time dilation.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Interstellar, but when that twist happened, my first thought was the original Lost in Space.
Oh, okay. Yep. Nice.
Wow, that's a deep cut. I actually hadn't thought of that in a good while.
Now, when you say the original Lost in Space, are you talking about the TV series or the movie that came out in like 97, 98?
So I haven't seen the original TV series, so I'm talking about the movie.
Okay, with Matt LeBlanc.
But the newer... Yes, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But not the
it's
newer
been a
Netflix
while since
show.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that, I mean, that's, you know, spoiler alert for Lost in Space, but that it's Will Robertson comes back. It's
oh,
his future
right.
self
okay.
that comes back.
Nice.
So that was my first thought. But I have heard that Interstellar was kind of referenced to a bunch as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I will say this is one of my biggest notes of the movie that I love. In the same way that Interstellar was scientifically factual, I get to put on my engineer hat for a little bit and say this is all scientifically factual time travel. They did everything correctly. I have a couple of thoughts about how they would have reached light speed that don't totally make sense, but that's neither here nor there. And just like actual scientists, they are using the real theory of relativity, multiverse theory, to talk about how Buzz exists twice. And then they're also just hand waving how he came back in time, because there is no scientific possibility of that happening. But they did an amazing job of actually proving and using a lot of the real time travel thoughts that I know most people won't appreciate, but was cool. And I think that's the reason we're comparing to Interstellar, because Interstellar like published 3 scientific papers after the movie came out, because they were able to help NASA scientists prove theories by making that movie. So there's a ton of stuff that Interstellar did amazingly correct. So I'm not surprised when we're talking about how Lightyear is being compared, because the science behind all of this is actually real. If we were ever to time travel, this would be how it happens.
And I don't know if you guys were looking through the credits, but like NASA actually was like heavily credited towards the end of that because of their involvement.
Right.
Yes, they were.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I feel like we talked around it a little bit. We talked about there being 2 versions of Buzz, but like that's the big reveal there, that Zurg is actually an alternate version of Buzz. I think he says he's 50 years older than the Buzz that we're spending time with. But so Buzz, the through line for Buzz in this movie is that he has this mission that he wants to accomplish. It's kind of his fault that this group of humans, these scientists, are stranded on this planet, which I believe is Takani Prime. And
yes,
it's kind of his hubris, his unwillingness to work with others. He really has a distaste for rookies and especially their sad eyes. And he wants to be the one that does everything. He doesn't trust autopilot. It has to be him at the helm controlling everything. And he gets a warning that collision is imminent, but he decides to go with it anyway. He's a space ranger. He's always sure. He's Buzz Lightyear. And he ends up making this giant colony ship that he refers to as the Turnip crash and they're marooned on this planet. And after a year, they begin doing these tests to try and basically get fuel that will allow them to travel into hyperspace by lassoing around the sun. Andrew, I'm sure you'll speak to the physics behind that a little bit better than I can. But with each subsequent mission, he finds that time keeps passing. There's time dilation. He's aging. Everybody else on the planet is aging. What's 4 minutes to him is 4 years for them. And he, even though he's missing out on his whole life there and seeing his best friend Alicia get older and older, he's just so doggedly determined to make this mission a success that he ends up losing her. He goes, I think Sox says it's like 62 years in the future by the time the sort that kind of montage of him attempting this mission kind of comes to a rest. So there's a version of him that comes back from a final mission where he commandeers a ship against Star Command's orders. And when he comes back, he's going to be arrested and he just takes off and flies even further into the future. And he gets hold of technology that's way beyond anything else that's been seen, and basically assumes the title of Zerg and finds, like, I think he describes it as an empty alien ship with crazy robotics and technology, but he makes the decision to travel back in time. And spoilers for the Disney Plus series Loki, that's a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but he kind of becomes like the TVA. He's wanting to prune this timeline that he sees as divergent because the mission hasn't been accomplished and he's missed out on his whole life. So that's where he kind of comes in as the villain, and Buzz has to make the decision. Is he going to stick to the mission and be the only one that can get it done, or will he rely on others and basically have a life and have friends?
Yeah, and there's a huge ethical conversation behind kind of erasing everyone and what's going on.
Right.
Also has to exist there in that. But yeah, it was a lot going on. And Zuhair, I'm curious, I would love for you to say this to the public. Why do you feel like, you know, what's going on with Zerg? What bugged you?
I'm sick of time travel. Yeah. I'm so sick of time travel. I'm sick of multiverse. Just have a fucking original idea, please. You don't need to flood the theaters with everything. Just like, as much as I love Star Wars, I thought this story was going to be more of a Star Trek type thing where we're seeing space rangers and space cadets like actually exploring planets. The way that they showed the variation of, I guess, which was one planet the whole time, I thought was going to be like different spots and different adventures. And I thought they were going to like run into a place that was like taken over by this Zerg empire. And then that's what brings up the threat. And then you have this ongoing thing of like, you know, trying to maybe free these systems or help these systems or anything of that sort. But the fact that it was like, oh, he's seeing his future self, this is time travel. I mean, the way that they showed it at the beginning of like him making these choices and, you know, seeing the ramifications of that, like, that was well done. I enjoyed it. I'm just sick of time travel. And with how great the acting was and the action and the music and just everything about it was so good that I just wish it had a better story, because I was so excited for it. And with seeing Buzz Lightyear in that first movie, excited to see a new, what he thought was a planet before he realized he was a toy, it's like, we didn't get any of that. And that's frustrating. Like, what is, we still don't really know what Space Command is, because it was just them marooned on a planet time traveling.
Is, like, are you mad at him traveling and missing the time as well, or getting lost?
No, that's one of those things time. Where it's
you're
like,
just upset that it was the big bad was him in the future.
I'm annoyed that the big bad was him in the future. The fact that he was missing time was an intrigue of something that I wasn't excited to see.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from. I just didn't, while I have, you know, obviously I've alluded to some of my issues with the movie. I think more so it's has to do with maybe like the lack of development from some of the side characters, but I'll get into that. But I thought it served really well as this like exploration of the character of Buzz, like who is Buzz, what makes Buzz the Space Ranger that he is. And I can kind of see where you're coming from, where we didn't really get to relish in that all that much, because it really did feel like an origin story in a lot of ways. Like, he had obviously been a Space Ranger with Alicia, and that was kind of his goal, is they wanted to be Space Rangers again. Like, that seemed very, very important to them. But when that opening sequence, like right after they landed on the planet, and he's like doing the whole narrating that we saw out of the trailer, and Alicia's making fun of him, and they've got the rookie whose last name I won't even attempt to pronounce. Like those, that whole sequence was pretty thrilling to me. The action there when they're cutting the vines and shooting the bugs, and like,
oh yeah,
the tone that was set there was really good. But I felt like we didn't get a lot of that again until the end, when he's in space fighting Zerg, gets to like deploy the wings. Like those felt like the moments where he was really like the Buzz Lightyear that we know and love from all his fame and glory. And the rest of it kind of felt like they had to regress a little bit just to kind of endear us to the character and have him go on an emotional journey, which I appreciated, but I can totally see where you're coming from with that, Zuhair.
Can we talk about how much of Top Gun Maverick was in this movie too?
I haven't seen it yet.
That's all I'll say. There was so much stuff that was just hand to hand. I was like,
Yeah, I think that's fair without spoiling anything for Top Gun.
Yeah, I'll text you about it later, but there was a lot of that in there. But yeah, that opening sequence was great. If you didn't tell me that Chris Evans was voicing him, like I thought Tim Allen would have come back for it. Just how Chris Evans, like you obviously got the Chris Evans part of him, but you could tell like how much he was just trying to replicate that as much as he could. And he did such a good job with it.
I agree.
Yeah.
It felt like Alec Guinness and Ewan McGregor. Like he was trying his best to hit those inflection points in the same way.
It was perfect. I enjoyed that part of it so much. When he interacted with the future gang and thought that they were experienced and had this elite squad and realized how dumb they actually were. What they gave us in the storytelling and the sequences were just great. Like all of that was awesome. I don't even like cats, and every scene with the cat was just phenomenal.
Oh yeah. How have we not talked about Sox yet? Sox stole the show for me. Sox was
great. The kid that I said wish I got scared and left, like every time Sox went meow 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 meow, like the kid like did the same thing at the top of his lungs, like right after. I'm like, please, for God's sake, leave. Yeah.
Luckily, we had a pretty empty theater.
Choke on your popcorn or something, but good Lord.
That's the one benefit of the Thursday preview is there's no kids there. Sure. They have school the next day.
Yeah, I went on 3:30 on a Sunday. I figured like I paid extra for Dolby. Like what parent wants to like spend that much money on like a whole family, right? Like they'll just go to the standard. No. They put them in Dolby.
Well, while we're on complaints, I think I only have one more that I want to bring up. It's not a total complaint, but it's on this note of character building. One of my favorite things that happened at the beginning of this movie felt like they were setting something else up, and it didn't happen.
Okay.
And that was the first time he took the test flight, and his engine shuts down, and the autopilot's like, you need to eject, this is your only option. He's like, no, I'm a space ranger. Shuts it off, takes out his protractor, starts doing the math on the actual windshield, which was actual physics he was doing, by the way. Like, it showed, hang on, we don't have our usual Han Solo, I can do this myself, or Poe Dameron. Mm-hmm. No, he's actually smart because he went to space on an elite mission, and they set him up to be a super intelligent space ranger.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the movie, they kind of just let him be, no, I need to do the mission, Space Ranger, again. Mm-hmm. And I almost wish they continued giving him those moments to show exactly how intelligent he was.
Sure.
Because he wasn't dumb compared to some of the others, but he still only had that one single moment of supreme intelligence, and then it disappeared. And I just wish they gave us more of that.
While I agree that they could have put more of his intelligence in there, I am all for like adding how emotion can sometimes just overpower every other skill set that you have, and showing that sequence, especially like with today's day and age of like emotional health kind of being prioritized. That stuff is always awesome for me, where it's like, I'm capable of doing this, but I'm going to let my emotions get the run of it. And there's obviously negative consequences to that. And there's been negative consequences to this, like outgrowing his old family and not checking in on Sox to see if they figured anything out, or coming up with a game plan before continuing. Like, it's just mission after mission. Like, he was only home for like a day or two, if not more than that. So I do agree on like adding a little bit more of it, but not in replacement of like what we got for like how he handled things.
I like that. That wasn't a direction I had attacked that train of thought from. And I guess that's the whole point of the deliberation. That's actually a really good point that I hadn't considered,
because that's why the weight of him seeing the hologram way later mattered so much because he was reminded of his capabilities and the importance of being a space ranger and like why he was on that mission to begin with and how he actually had to like think his way through. Like, I think if he had like a scientific solutions to everything, that wouldn't have mattered as much because he could have like thought about that before. So I think for overall, it was pretty well balanced on him having those emotional impulses to everything.
And I do think that we got to see some more of that, not necessarily science smart, but thinking through the problem. Two instances come to my mind when they were in the red cones. Mm-hmm. He knew he had to hit the button and then join them and then smash the thing. And I think that was problem solving.
Yeah.
Right. Activate ray shields.
After he got through that emotional, like, I don't want to be stuck in there with you guys, he thought through and solved the problem and knew he had to. And then in the last big fight scene, I forget exactly because there was a lot going on, but I think he did some sort of problem solving with the laser beam and the countdown and everything. I think there was a balance of the science and thinking things through and the emotional.
Getting the ship back into the atmosphere, using the escape or the eject chair as a jetpack, jerry-rigging the laser onto his wrist, like all of that was just his intelligence.
Yeah, I do agree with Andrew that I maybe would have liked to see a little more of like the pen to paper intelligence there, but certainly he showcased a lot of like problem solving on the fly in all those sequences that you brought up. And I think of the like the one sequence when they were on like the dark side of the planet and he's over there trying to think and he's clearly trying to come up with a strategy and do some problem solving. But then more and more, Alicia's granddaughter, Izzy, just through kind of like her pluckiness, she more and more shows her capability and has good ideas and shows that she's a Hawthorne, and he starts to become a little more endeared to her. But someone mentioned the like holographic sequence where we got to see, I believe you're referring to the holographic sequence where we saw Alicia one more time. And it's like her last message to Sox, like, I need you to take care of my best friend. Mm-hmm. And like my takeaway, especially on the second viewing, is Taika Waititi's character, Mo, certain points in this movie, he really annoyed me. It's just like, how much of a klutz can you be? Like, especially when I thought he killed Sox, I was like, get this guy out of here. Like, this guy is just not worth it. But, you know, it did set up Sox for the reboot in which we got to see that moment. And I'm still kind of on the fence towards the end of the film, whether or not he earned his keep and he deserves to have that Space Ranger suit on. But it's just one of the interesting things about the film, how Buzz goes from being so capable and relying on his own devices and capability to kind of having to clean up after the bumbling of this, what were they, the junior patrol? They're first introduced as like an elite squad, but we find out very quickly they're a junior patrol. And I'm not trying to be overly negative here, but as much as the movie did a great job of servicing the character of Buzz, it's like those side characters. I would have liked to learn a little bit more about their personal lives and their personal, you know, their inner workings and what makes them tick. Particularly, what was her name? The elderly, the convict.
Darby.
Darby, yeah. I wanted to learn more about Darby because like her interactions with Buzz and some of the comedy there was great.
When the guest is more prepared than we are.
I think a lot of you have mentioned the character development, and I think I saw a lot of character development, but I do think Darby was had the least character development journey. I think it goes Buzz and then Izzy and then Mo and then Darby.
Sure.
I agree. Maybe he didn't deserve his keep, but I do think that he got a little bit more of a development than Darby did. She was pretty the same the whole time.
Sure.
And that was an instance of, I agree, I wish we got more of them, but it felt like they almost had to leave something on the cutting room floor, that they were kind of setting up Mo to be the tech of the group in the way that he understood what circuits they needed when they repaired the ship. He's like, we learned this in the academy. Yeah. We did this already. And I almost wonder if they had a little bit more planned and they just couldn't quite get to it.
Sure.
Because it seemed like he was going to do that. Darby was going to be your weapons, your bruiser, right. your heavy, and then you have the other two leading the group, and we just didn't quite get there. But mm-hmm. I do think there was a lot of great stuff going on, and I mean, how could you have a tech guy that doesn't also have a pen at all times? I mean, he's ready to do anything you need.
Right, right.
I finally got to use the pen. Just the tiny little background scene at the end where he pulls out the new pen. I just loved that.
I lost it.
It comes out of his elbows.
Yes.
On that end scene, I want to talk about the Easter eggs that were in that ending scene.
Okay.
And I need to give credit to my mother because she pointed these out to me, which is crazy.
All right.
The planet that they were going to was, or they were going to Gamma Quadrant Sector 4.
Mm-hmm.
That is what it says on the side of the Buzz Lightyear box in the first movie.
Ooh.
That he's going on his mission to explore Gamma Quadrant Sector 4. And when he jumps out of the ship, that's what he's trying to scan for is life.
Nice.
So they literally set up that he was leaving this movie to go to Toy Story. And then also the ship they were on was in the shape of the box, which was the fun thing. But like they had all of that sprinkled in.
Oh, nice. We have the Buzz from Disney and we kept that box.
Cool.
Sorry. No, and then you had all the other things that the suits did with the laser on there, with the wings. It was just all great stuff. But the fact that they bridged into it so perfectly, I love the attention to detail.
That's what I mentioned. I loved that, you know, the Buzz that we grew up with, the toy Buzz, is all about his wings and his laser beam. And in this movie, it wasn't, they were very subtle. And they were, like you said, devices that he, you know, jerry-rigged to himself to use. And then in that final scene, they become a part of his final suit.
Right.
And I appreciate that they said this was Andy's favorite movie, but I do feel like the sequel to this movie is what our Buzz, like that doll is the Buzz from a sequel.
Sure.
Even though I loved, like that you said, like, this ship is going to where our Buzz arrives. But that's the Buzz, I think, is what we get in Toy Story, is like the sequel to this.
Yeah. And that being said, I really hope we get a sequel, because I feel like they were definitely setting up for a sequel. Like, this is the first Pixar movie to have like post-credit scenes, and it has 3 post-credit scenes. So I really hope that it gets the sequel. The performance at this point has me kind of having my reservations about
that. Did we just blow Sarah Day's mind with 3 post-credit scenes?
Yeah, I saw one. My family was like, all right, ready? I'm like, no, we got to wait for a post-credit scene. So I saw the one, the bug fly into the fence. I'm like, okay, fine. Like, we don't have to wait anymore. I'll Google it later. Totally forgot to Google it. So I have two to go see. Or you can tell me.
I mean, yeah, 2 of them were silly, but there was a big one too.
So should I, can you tell me or should I see it?
No, let's tell her.
Tell me.
Okay, go for it.
So there's a scene where it's like they're out in space and you see all the rummage and everything floating, and it zooms into Zurg and his eyes light back up. So he's alive as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So sequel. We're getting a sequel.
Yeah.
And I hope he actually gets the title of Emperor in the sequel, because that was my, again, one other nitpick. How is he evil Emperor Zurg if he never actually ruled over anyone in this movie? Like, I agree with what Sarah Day is getting at.
Yeah.
Don't think about it too much. The toys have slightly different knowledge, but this is probably the sequel is where the toy really comes from.
Sure.
I thought, I did laugh at it, but facepalm at the same time at the fact that he's named Zurg because the robots couldn't say Buzz.
That was one of my favorite things. I love that little sound bite. It kind of like reminded me of like the droids from the battle droids from the Star Wars prequel trilogy. Their whole Roger, just the fact that they're the Zurg, like that was great and provided a lot of comedy. It does remind me though, like Andrew, you mentioned like the whole how his calculations that he was doing was something that you felt like they set up but then didn't necessarily pay off with. Another one of those like situations for the movie for me was one of the Zurg drones, like the first one that they fight that gets tagged with the purple paint, gets the harpoon in the head, loses an arm, and it's kind of like stalking them the entire time. I was like, okay, Pixar always kind of has these recurring gags. Like, what is this droid or drone going to do? And then after Zurg is defeated and they land on the planet and we think the conflict is all over, there that drone is, and he just gets taken out by Burnside. And I was like, it was deflating, like climactically deflating, but for comedy. I did not see that coming. I was wondering what they were going to do with that drone the entire time.
Wasn't that drone also the one that stuck the transport thing to the side of their ship that they then used to get the ship to Zerg ship later on? I thought that was the one that they hit and happened to stick them. I could be wrong, but I thought that was also part of the payoff was like, that's why they had one still sticking around is because...
I know that he saw them chasing them, but I don't know if he's the one that actually... Because then his... They only have like one transporter each, right?
I believe so.
I thought that's what it was, is he didn't get to trigger his because he was killed, or they, I guess it's a robot. They were killed before they could hit it on the side of the ship, so that's why it was still there and unactivated.
Yeah, it's possible, but coming off of a second viewing, I was really trying to be eagle-eyed about what that particular drone was doing, and I want to say that it wasn't that drone, because that drone like came into the picture where they were already kind of like hovering over the lava fields, and he just like... they just stood right in front of the ship and got kind of like knocked out then. I think it was another one that stuck the transporter to the side of the ship and then got blasted the first time that Buzz gets to use that wrist laser.
I guess we need to watch it again.
completely random, but since you said eagle-eyed, something I was eagle-eyed the whole time trying to find was three-eyed aliens.
Oh, yeah.
And I did not see anything, but I did see that there is a three-eyed alien Easter egg somewhere in there, but I missed it. Really? I was looking for them.
I think I saw it. But it does not take the form of an actual physical three-eyed alien if it's the one that I'm thinking I saw.
Okay.
What do you think? Which one do you think you saw?
Back.
I believe the shape of the back of Buzz's ship, or the one that the armadillo they were escaping on, had three thrusters and an antenna up and two to the side. So when Zerg was doing the little, oh, I gotta track you like a fighter plane, the shape that he was tracking was a little green alien body. Okay. If that's not the Easter egg, it was super duper close to what that shape is.
Okay.
That was the only thing that I saw at any point that I was like, I think that's what they're going for. And if that's the only green man, I'm going to be a little upset. I was thinking they were going to be controlling the robots at first. That's where I thought this was all going. After Buzz came out of Zerg, I was like, the robots are going to be the green men. That's why we didn't actually see any of them get killed. They all got transported.
Right.
I thought that's where we were going.
That would have been funny. Yeah.
That would have been great. I would have loved that.
Yeah. I was definitely kind of like looking for the three-eyed aliens and was slightly disappointed that they weren't there. But then again, that's, you know, the difference between like setting up expectations and actually being open to what they give us. So I wasn't too disappointed, but I was surprised by how kind of reserved they were with the Toy Story references. You guys brought up the Gamma Quadrant that they were going to at the end of the film, as well as the ship looking like that box that the action figure arrives in. But then I felt like most of the references were kind of like saved for the beginning. You know, he says, Star Command, come in Star Command. Why don't they answer? Which is directly from Toy Story. We saw that in the trailer. But then when he's doing his whole spiel to the newbie and the rookie in the opening sequence there, and Alicia's playing the music in the background, he's, you're mocking me, aren't you? Like, that was another one of those lines that was lifted directly out of Toy Story, but I don't know if I picked up on too many others.
There was the karate chop arms that he does when Sock scares him.
Oh yeah.
I think is exactly what he does when Woody sneaks up on him in the first movie. He's like, ha!
Right, nice. That's a good call.
Wasn't that button like in between his wings? Because when he was missing an arm, didn't Andy have to like push him in the back?
Aside from Toy Story references, though, we talked about the kind of, at least from a theory standpoint, a lot of how it borrowed from Interstellar. But another thing I had to highlight is another one of my favorite sci-fi films is 2001: A Space Odyssey, and the first time that he goes into hyperspace or hyperspeed, just the way the stars turn into like this like geometric like color display and he's flying through them definitely was homage to 2001: A Space Odyssey, and I really appreciated that.
And possible scientific theoretical accuracy again. That coming shows, in droves, but
that shows just how much they knew back in the 60s. I believe that movie came out before the lunar landing took place. Kubrick made that movie before the lunar landing ever happened. So that's, I won't get too much into conspiracy theories there, but that, you know, that's why a lot of people believe Kubrick filmed the lunar landing.
Yeah. Well, and since we're talking about things that I love, I have just the animation on this film was absolutely incredible. I talked about this when we talked about the trailer, that this was probably going to be Pixar's best showing, and they knocked it out of the park, in my opinion. Just everything looks so crisp, so real. They had moments that they did not need to put in the effort they did. Mm-hmm. Like Buzz's cowl or the head scarf that he wears, the purple thing.
The snood. I learned that from the Disney Plus featurette called the snood.
the snood, apparently.
Yes.
There was a point they zoomed in on him when he was showing the emotion and the sadness in his face after they crashed. And they had the individual woven textures deliberately with light bouncing through them. And then when he took it off, his hair was actually blowing in the wind in certain scenes, like when they were over the canyon.
Mm-hmm.
It would just blow ever so slightly as though there was a breeze going through. And you didn't need that. Izzy, her hair was tied back, so hers wasn't even moving. They could have just said, oh, there's no wind there, we don't need to show this, but they still did. And the light diffusion between the hairs, it was just,
yeah,
there was so much attention to detail that I absolutely want to watch this movie when it comes out on Disney Plus at like half speed, just to appreciate so many of the things that they did, because I'm sure there's things I'm not even mentioning that blew other animation fanatics out of the water.
Sure.
But yeah, what do you guys think besides just the words, it's beautiful? Like,
yeah, it's hard to say anything other than it was beautiful, but Pixar has always been ahead of its time when it comes to animation, computer generated animation. And I agree 100% with you. Like, they knocked it out of the park. Like, the lighting was phenomenal. Like you said, the attention to detail, like, yes, the characters, everything you said, but even the suit, like the rust, the dents, the scrape, like paint being scraped off, it was incredible. And like the lighting, my mom kept saying when they put their fish bowls on, the lighting, like on their helmets, like was bouncing off.
Oh, yeah.
And like everything was just so gorgeous.
Even that little opening sequence where you could see like Buzz's reflection in the glass of the fishbowl. I think that's
when
why
they did it with Izzy, though. I think that made us in that moment terrified with her.
Oh, yeah.
When she went to do her spacewalk, they also did the cam. Sorry, go ahead, Sue. I didn't mean to cut you off there, but
I was just going to make a comparison, but yeah, that was a good point. And I had forgot about that scene, and that was pretty terrifying, especially when the ship started moving and she wasn't on track anymore. And then I was scared for, what do you forget the cat's name?
Socks.
Yeah, I don't know. I was so scared for Socks because I thought she was actually going to drift. I'm
me
like,
no.
That this is the only cat I like. Bring it back. But I was thinking about like one of the things that I really appreciate about the newer Star Wars stuff is that you could see the stormtrooper suits like beat up a lot more because they're just like pristine white throughout the whole original trilogy. Yeah. So seeing that like war-torn battle damage and seeing that on Lightyear's suit was really cool too.
Yeah, I mean, I can only echo the sentiments of what's been said so far. I think my like key takeaway is just the attention to detail. It's Pixar has like achieved a new level of like realism, and it's really interesting the fact that they've got like this cartoony feel to everything, but it's still so hyper real, and it just creates like a really pleasing aesthetic. But you know, things I picked up, Andrew, you mentioned like the textures, the worn, torn, weathered feel. It's a lived in world. But I, both times I watched, there was a sequence where Buzz is like sweating, and just watching like the sweat glisten on his forehead was like something that stuck out to me. It's just truly incredible how far they've come, and I'm excited to see how they continue to push the envelope. And it seems like with some of their films, they've kind of like branched into different forms of animation, but it all, you know, still feels like Pixar, but they're not afraid to like mess with that toy box and that sandbox, no pun intended with the toy box reference there. But you mentioned the sequence with the spacewalk and being terrified for Socks. And I agree. That was one of the most like intense moments of the movie for me. But I wanted to ask Sarah Day and Andrew, you both specifically mentioned like the emotional punch that you experienced with this movie. What were some of the moments for you? Because there were certainly emotional moments for me, but I just never felt my heartstrings being tugged at like they have been in other Pixar movies.
I mean, the big one for me that comes to mind, I compared it to Up, because mm-hmm. that montage of Buzz going back into space, it was the same feeling, because mm-hmm. I knew what was going to happen. I knew that door was going to open and there was going to be a time when she wasn't going to get there. And I'm even getting choked up if you're listening closely.
Sorry to make you relive it.
No, it's fine. I think it was the buildup to all of it that like mm-hmm. I knew it was coming. I got to see her be happy. I got to see her have a child, that child go to school. Like, you're slowly growing with them, that suddenly to have that rug pulled out under you, even though I knew, I still just couldn't contain it anymore, because they put you through 5 minutes of building that emotion. I'm like, I'm not ready. Waterworks open. Like, yeah. That, I think that was the biggest one. And that's why, like I said, it might not carry the emotional weight at the end of the film, like a lot of these do, but that was one of the big right there in the middle. It punched me and I had to catch my breath. I couldn't do it. It's the same reason, like, I cried at Avengers Endgame. Tony Stark, spoilers, I guess, Tony Stark's death, it didn't really hit me that hard. But because I was on the verge of tears for a half hour watching our characters get beaten, the minute it happened, I just lost it. It's a great buildup and payoff that, like, I'm not complaining I cried, but that was a big one. Not. And then just those little moments, like Sarah Day said, when it kicked in at the beginning and it's like, wait, I'm Andy right now. I'm in a theater watching Andy's movie. I was like, I get to be the kid I've always wanted to be. So it was those little things that, like I said, it might not be weight at the end, but it is those punches that they threw in strategic places to get little, you know, sob stories like me to fall apart.
For me, it's like three part, and you just hit the nail on the head with that one part being nostalgia. Like, I am Andy watching this movie. Like, I almost cried when you said that just then. Like I said, I grew up with him, so like I actually get to be him seeing this movie, and I've always loved Woody and Buzz. Like, I always loved Toy Story 2 also. And now that, you know, my kid is loving Toy Story, and like, she loves Buzz. Like, she, as soon as she watched Toy Story, she just had this affection for Buzz Lightyear. And so, you know, it's all this nostalgia. It's getting to experience it with her, and then also seeing a little bit of myself in the characters, specifically Izzy, and like overcoming that anxiety of being in space. Like, I struggle with anxiety, and like they filmed that scene of her crossing that little section of space so well, like aesthetically pleasing. And then you just hear her breathing, and like, you can feel that what she's experiencing, and then she's overcoming it. And it was just so powerful. So that was one moment for me, watching her overcome that. Like, I got emotional then. And then, of course, then right after she overcomes this, Sox gets knocked off, and you're like, oh no, Sox. It's like this powerful moment and then this fearful moment. And then, but going back to this nostalgia, I also got teary eyed when his wings came out. I was like, there they are.
Yeah, that was great. Yep.
Well, I don't want to make you more emotional, Sarah Day, but I am going to. There's some hope for you in the future, especially with Disney continuing to make sequels. You know, I grew up, like, the first Toy Story was one of the big movies for me as a kid. My parents have watched those all with me. They watched the second one with me. My whole family went with me to see Toy Story 3. And at 23 years old, my whole family just went again together to see Lightyear all of these years later. So you have plenty of years together with your family getting to experience these characters. So, like, enjoy it and run with that feeling, because it was awesome getting to do it again so much later, because we've all been through that. So,
right. I can't remember if I actually went to the theater to see the Toy Story movies other than Toy Story 3. I'm sure we did. But I just getting to see that experience with my little one, it was just, I mean, I think going into it with that just set me up for the tears. But then the movie being so good, just, I mean, immediately that the title card, and I'm just like, oh, I'm Andy.
Yeah, I think there is something to be said for this being the first like film to be released theatrically by Pixar since Onward, since like right before the global pandemic really became a thing. And it's just, it is really nice that it's a legacy film like this. Like for me, Toy Story, the original Toy Story, was definitely one of the first movies I saw in the theater. I think the only movie I saw in the theater before that was 1994's The Pagemaster with Macaulay Culkin. There's a deep cut for you. But I don't know. I don't recall seeing two or three in theaters, but I definitely saw four in theaters. And yeah, I don't know what the general consensus on Toy Story 4 is, but I definitely teared up in the theater for that one as well. So it's just awesome to be able to experience Buzz Lightyear in whatever incarnation he is on the big screen where he deserves to be. And I'm glad that they released it theatrically rather than going the Disney Plus route. But that being said, I am excited to watch it again on Disney Plus and comb through every little fine-tuned detail and find all the references that we can't conjure up at the top of our heads right now after just a couple of viewings for some of us. Yeah,
I can't wait to see it again. Like you said, I want to find that three-eyed alien Easter egg, but this is definitely a movie to see on the big screen.
I think three might have been the only one I saw on the big screen. I'm not even sure if I was in this country by the time one came out. 95? I have no recollection of two. Yeah. I don't think I'd moved by then. I moved like somewhere around 95. So yeah, I don't recall seeing the second one. I definitely saw the third one because it was like me and all my high school friends were like, we have to go watch this.
Babies.
And the fourth one I watched on a flight because it didn't feel right about there being a fourth one the way the third ended. So like I didn't watch it in theaters, but I did watch it on a plane ride. And I was like, all right, this is funny. Man, that original Buzz Lightyear movie and the series that followed it. Disney, I don't know why Disney is denying it ever existed. Like, just throw it on Plus and let people, like, just milk it. It's fine. Bring
They've
it back.
Erased it from the internet. It's gone.
Yeah.
Like, you can't find it anywhere unless you manage to track down a VHS copy, because I've tried. There's not even bootleg copies. Disney has erased it.
So weird. So
I wonder why. Because I remember watching that.
It's good. That's the worst part. Like, it's not like it's anything shameful, like some of the other stuff.
Yeah. Bringing up that series does remind me one kind of final talking point that I wanted to bring up. And it goes back to Zurg. And with the future version of Buzz finding this ship, and like Buzz even asks him at one point, like, did we engineer all this technology? Did we create all this? And he says, no, we kind of stole it from here and there and cobbled it all together to create this, the older Buzz that is.
Borrowed.
Right.
Buzz doesn't steal.
Well, this mission-bound Buzz is certainly capable of some unsavory things. But yeah, borrowed is the correct terminology there. I'm wondering, even though we had like the tease with the end credits scene, that at least this version of Zurg is still around. In that cartoon series and what we were presented with in the Toy Story films, Zurg was much more of like an overlord, kind of mustache-twirling, Darth Vader-esque bad guy that didn't really go toe-to-toe with Buzz all that often. He was more than happy to send his drones to do his dirty work. But this version of Zurg was definitely a bruiser, and that makes sense with him being Buzz, like enjoying the action, wanting to get his hands dirty. Do we think that there's another version of Emperor Zurg somewhere out there, maybe in the far future, that he kind of co-opted?
You just gave me an idea. Because in this film, like, I agree that it's not really like the Zurg that we got from like the toy that we get from the film. So what if, because he stole this technology in the ship already, what if he stole the Zurg armor? So this isn't really the Zurg, like he just took whoever real Zurg is his armor, and we
this
get
is like
the
a
real
Zurg battle suit, and we still have the slim down one that we're used to seeing,
right, with the
so it cloak. Is his father.
Yeah,
I knew that was going to create problems anyhow. Yeah. So like, I think them kind of throwing out the continuity and just being like, we'll figure this out.
My thing with that, like the continuity is like, these are toys. Like their personalities don't have to match up to what we just saw in Lightyear, because like in Toy Story 2, we have two Buzzes that are completely different, you know? And like,
that's true.
So like these toys that become sentient, however they do, is their own personalities. Like two Woody dolls are probably going to be different, you know, the two Jessie dolls, whatever, are all going to have different personalities because they are their own sentient beings. You know, they're just based on whatever they're based on. So I had no problems with not getting more Toy Story references other than the Buzz stuff that a toy, you know, would have from a film.
Yeah. That does make me think, though, if this was the film that Andy went and saw, how does he not have some version of a Sox toy?
There has to be a Sox toy.
I was about to say, did his mom not have enough to like pitch in for the accessory toys, or what's up there?
I don't know. With how many toys they had in that house, I feel like there would have been plenty. And yeah, that's kind of the messy continuity you get with a not quite prequel right here.
It would have been nice if they had, I mean, if we could go back through the Toy Stories, if there was just some sort of stuffed animal in the background of a Toy Story that they based Sox off instead.
Yeah.
Well, on the topic of the movie, I did have one more thing to bring up.
Yeah, please.
My ears didn't quite perk up at any music, as is usually my thing, but it did perk up at the sound design in general. Was immaculate throughout this whole movie. I felt like I was sitting in any sci-fi thriller, in any Star Wars, Star Trek, Star Tours, anything that you want to put out there. They did a really, really good job, in part because, again, sitting through the credits, found out Lucasfilm Sound was actually accredited with assisting on this film. So they did, I'm guessing they brought in some of that specialty. And the number one scene that is just the one that I need to say when I go back and watch, I'm going to have my speakers on full blast for, because it was amazing, was when they got sucked out of the Zerg ship. The sound completely escaped the theater, exactly like it would in outer space. I've been talking about science, and it's just that amazing, like, they did the real thing, and yes, you wouldn't hear the real explosion, but the impact that it made because it sucked the sound out was just beautiful in every way, and I absolutely cannot wait to have that moment again and again and again. It was so good.
I didn't want to steal that from you, but when that happened, I was like, ooh, Andrew's gonna love this. One of the Star Treks that was the first movie to like not have any sound in space because of the accuracy of that.
I think
it was the second Star Trek movie from that trilogy where they were like tubing down and it was just like pin drop silence the whole time.
I don't have that factoid off the top of my head, but I'd be interested to learn. But on the subject of sound and sound cues and legacy sci-fi films, I definitely appreciated that they included the Wilhelm scream in the opening sequence when they had the vine hoisting up both Buzz and the Rookie, and then the Rookie falls and you get that great Wilhelm scream.
I can't remember if it's Apollo 13 or The Martian, but one of them like explains the physics of like using the gravitational field of like the moon or the sun or something to like set up the slingshot effect to get the speed and momentum. Do you remember at the top of your head?
I know. It's the scene where they explain it is the meeting of Elrond scene in The Martian, where Donald Glover's character comes in and he uses the pen to slingshot around the other characters. It's one of my favorite. I love The Martian. That movie's so good. Digital high five, Zuhair.
Matt Damon?
Yes.
Yeah.
And since we only have a couple minutes left, J. Scotty, you did tease at the top, as we talk about the gravitational pull, again, that was totally scientifically accurate. And is my one like question that they kind of left unanswered with the science of, if he's having to use the sun to slingshot himself to make what they were referring to as hyperspace, which would theoretically be light speed or approaching light speed, how were they going to slingshot the turnip if they did that? Like, that was my only hang on. How does this work? Unless they were just trying to prove that the fuel was viable to reach hyperspeed without blowing up, that could just be the single explanation if they wanted to create a hyperloop in order to do the testing. But yeah, it was exactly reminiscent of how they do it in The Martian. And again, just real life, raw. I love this. This is my bread and butter. I'm so happy.
Yeah, that popped into my head. And when you brought it up at the top, I was like, I can't explain it, but I know I've had it explained to me before in a movie.
Yes, it's that any planet has a gravitational field and you can get closer to it and it will start to pull you in. But as long as you're moving fast enough, in the same way that when you're going around a banked turn in your car. If you move faster, you just go through the turn as opposed to flying off of the turn. You can kind of feel that pull downward. Basically, if your ship is moving fast enough, you get pulled toward the planet, but you're not getting pulled into it.
Right.
So it essentially just makes you go faster and faster, having to use less energy to actually do that. And that's why it was a big part of The Martian, because they could save fuel by slingshotting around the sun, because they could go faster without having to use the fuel to get up to that point. In the same way, he was testing this of, instead of going a far distance and going light speed, we go a short distance around this nearby sun.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I hadn't really considered it. Like, my takeaway, and maybe I just misunderstood, but I thought the whole purpose of him doing the slingshot around the sun with the particular crystalline fuel was that he was harnessing that energy for the turnip to be used later on. I don't even know if that's possible, but, or if that works within the confines of the theoretical engineering and physics that we're talking about here. But that was my takeaway, is that the turnip itself was never going to have to do that slingshot maneuver, but that's why he was so determined to hold on to that crystalline fuel source as much as he was. But I guess it's also because he accidentally destroyed the formula when he was eluding Star Command with Sox, and that last time he went on the mission.
Yeah, that was my interpretation, was he held it for that purpose. But okay, because crystalline fuels don't really exist in this world, you could be exactly right, and they're harnessing it as a battery to use to power the turnip. So
yeah, I don't know.
That much I'm not going to even attempt to get into. This is, I've already probably swung above my weight, and there's someone out there angry at the things I've said. So we're just going to run until, fake it till you make it, guys. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how much more I have to say about the movie, but I will say I am definitely interested in trying a sandwich with the meat on the outside, because apparently that's the way you do it.
So. No. Yeah, the other way is too much bread.
That just sounds too slimy.
For that. The sticky fingers are the best part.
No. I've got a thing about my hands being dirty and stay. Just, no, can't do it. Hard pass. Give me the carbs.
All right. Any final thoughts on Lightyear, or should we transition to some feedback? Okay.
The first one is from Carl Bartok. First of all, sorry for my poor choice of words. I'm from Czech Republic, so English isn't my main language. Guys, you are golden. Before I found you, I didn't have anybody to speak about Young Justice. Now I know that every week I got new opinions, new points of view, etc., and I'm really glad that we have you. I don't want to speak much about my thoughts on Young Justice, so I keep it short. I was happy that Calderon takes a break. It's been my favorite character for a long time. I had similar problems as him. I didn't take a break when my girlfriend left me, and it was breaking me from the inside. I am glad that he takes a break, because I kind of know how hard it is to keep going. Then that moment when he fights Zod and goes kind of toe-to-toe with him, it was beautiful. What do I hope for Season 5? Rocket and Orion ship? Yes, yes, I know. This ship is a little bit weird, but I think it could work. I was happy when Orion asked before then go to the boom tube about Rocket's bubbles. I hope they find a way to be closer. One question, will you guys cover Target's comic? It could be fun. Now it is all on us. Keep the flame burning and let's show WB and HBO we want Season 5. Thanks for everything and stay well. Carl Bartok, Czech.
Woo!
I think that English indeed. Was perfect, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I can answer one of those questions. Please. At the top here. And I haven't even talked to my co-hosts about this, so this is going to be a big surprise. I got a text from Haley Hobbs a couple days ago of the Source Pages podcast, in which she mentioned she would love to cover these Target comics with us. We kind of toyed around whether or not it's going to be in their feed, our feed, whatever, but we're already starting to build out what those plans would look like. So short answer, yes, we want to and will be covering the Target's comics. Only problem we're kind of looking at is they're releasing them every couple months. So we have the first issue now, second issues in August, third issues in September, and it's a 6-issue run. So it might be a while, but when it happens and we have enough information, yes, we will be covering those comics, because I adored the first one.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun to kind of have an episode when it's all done, so that we can have an excuse to talk about it again and kind of get the filter going and maybe get some rewatches in.
What is it?
It's a comic that is directly after this recent season of Young Justice. It's all like connected and canon and just more storytelling.
It's connecting seasons 3 and 4, actually.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So these are the ones you've been referring to.
Yes, these are
times. Okay, because I was
It's under the name Targets. It's the Young Justice digital first comics that just came out. The first issue just dropped.
Okay, and for still an uninformed, ignorant fool here, educate me a little bit. Is it Target as in like that's the name of the particular storyline? Are we talking about Target the retailer?
No, it's the name of the storyline is Young Justice Targets in the same way that the season was Young Justice Phantoms.
Okay. Yeah, the team just all goes to Target together and we find out like what they shop for on a weekly basis and what they need to get through.
I would pay to see the Teen Titans actually do that. I want to see Raven get mad when Beast Boy starts eating the dog food. Like, give it to me.
Raven's not in Young Justice yet.
I was going to say, are the Teen Titans Young Justice?
Some of them.
Okay.
We haven't seen Starfire or Raven yet.
Right. Oh, because I was a really big Teen Titan fan, and I because of you, Zuhair, I watched the first few episodes of Young Justice, particularly during the time where you guys were fighting to keep it going.
Right.
Yes.
And I'm still trying to get into it, but knowing that characters I do know are in it is enticing to get back in there and watch it some more.
Yeah, Carl, I just want to thank you for submitting feedback. It's awesome to know that we have listeners in all areas of the world, and I'm glad you have this passion for Young Justice, and I'm glad you have us as a place to bounce some of your ideas off of. So don't be afraid to get spoilery and deep with the Young Justice details. We're here for you. That's why we do what we do.
So in this email, he actually wrote Calderon in Czech. And I'm not actually sure, it's in, like, Czech text.
Characters.
And it looks really cool. Yeah, characters. Obviously, I wasn't even going to try to pronounce that, but it's just, I just want the listeners to know it looks really cool. So Carl, our second email.
I was just going to say to Carl, if you can send us in a voice memo, if that's within your capabilities, and let us know how to pronounce Calderon's name in Czech.
I believe that's correct. I had to look it up. I had to make sure that the language is actually Czech and it wasn't something else.
It'd be great to hear. So thank you.
And to all our listeners, if anybody ever wants to send a voice memo, we're always happy to play those. So our second email is from Chrissy. Hey guys, it's Chrissy. Been a while since I wrote in. When people say LOL, like, should I just say LOL? Should I skip it or should I just laugh for no reason?
Don't do the last one.
I'm tempted to do that.
I leave it in your capable hands. However you want to tackle it, you are free to do what you want to do.
Well, I got Sarah Day to do it, so I'll just plug that in every time.
Nice. I'll get a soundboard going. Here we go. I like this.
That's for Zencastr Premium. Anyways. I'm just starting to catch up on y'all's podcast, and I went on a little hiatus for a bit and listened to music, but here I am. But as I am catching up, maybe you've discussed this, maybe you haven't. But Avatar Studios just announced 3 animated movies. Yes, we have. Not sure when they're going to be released, but I saw as possibility that there'll be movies about Avatar Kyoshi, Zuko, and Korra. So there's some excitement there and more content to possibly talk about and discuss. Also, I'm going to be having surgery on Monday the 20th, so by the time y'all read this, I'll be in recovery. And I'll be out of work for 2 weeks, so I need things to watch to keep me sane. So if y'all have any suggestions, I would love to hear them. So that's my quick little thing that I just wanted to pop in, say hi, and mention this exciting news that we got from Avatar, The Last Airbender creators, because I've known they've been working on things in secret for a while now and finally have news. So stay well, my dudes, and I look forward to listening to y'all while I recover and keeping me from going stir crazy at home for 2 weeks. LOL.
Nice.
Well, glad we can grace your ears during that time.
Yes, I am very excited about the Avatar news. I don't know if this Kyoshi, Zuko, and Korra stuff is confirmed, but if it is, I'm very excited about it because the 2 Kyoshi books, Rise of Kyoshi and Shadow of Kyoshi, were amazing and they are canon and it would love to see that animated. The graphic novels about Zuko was really good. There was a lot of cheesy stuff in there, but...
Did he really become an Avatar?
No.
Okay. I thought you mentioned Avatars Kyoshi.
No, she was giving Kyoshi the title of Avatar, and then
got it. Okay.
So no, Zuko's not an Avatar, but the graphic novels is basically about like the ramifications of the Fire Nation like taking over kingdom stuff and like colonizing them. So it's like, is this one Earth Kingdom? Is that one Fire Nation? Do they want to be independent? Like, there's a lot of political drama, and it's really fascinating on how Zuko and Aang like try to deal with that. And I am one of the people who just really likes the Korra stuff, and just I'm very excited to see how they expand on that, and the fact that they're actually going to be movies and not shows.
And they're by the OG creators, right? These movies by the OG, which I think is really nice, because I am really excited about the live action. I was a little bummed when the OG creators left the project, but I'm still excited about it. But I'm so glad that they are still working with Netflix in some way, and they still get to tell the stories they want to tell.
Yeah, so when this news came out, I think it was a couple of the lead animators that had left too.
Oh no.
So it's interesting how many people are leaving the Netflix show because of creative differences. But whatever it takes to get us more of animated content, I'm very happy with that.
Yeah,
for sure.
And as I've learned, Dave Filoni of Star Wars fame and the show that we've covered on here, Bad Batch, he got his start working as some kind of like animator on the Avatar the Last Airbender series, right?
He was a producer.
Was he a producer? Okay.
Yeah, like the second the show ended, it's just Dave Filoni. That's how the credits start.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, I also just want to say, hey, Christy, thanks for writing in again. It's perfectly fine that you took a hiatus. Life has a way of, you know, getting busy if you're doing it right. And as far as your surgery goes, I wish you a successful and smooth surgery with as little pain as possible. And hopefully your recovery is a speedy one.
We're all praying for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Stay well and hope you recover perfectly and quickly.
Keep feeling the aster.
All right, Scoot, starting with you. What's the suggestion?
Okay, I will start with my first suggestion. And if you've been listening to the show for any amount of time, my kind of go-to, it's a rewatch for me, but it just stands the test of time, and it will actually be coming back next year in 2023. But it's the little show that just won't go away, and it's Futurama. It's been my show that I've been kind of like going back to, and it's just, it's funny, it's got action, the characters are great and endearing, and it tackles like some pretty highbrow sci-fi elements, but it also just has this emotional through line, and there are certain episodes that just like make me weep, and it stands the test of time, and definitely a good one to binge. They've got the entire series on Hulu right now, including the four movies that came out during its hiatus that it took. So yeah, that's my first suggestion.
All right, Saturday.
I'm going to go with Camp Cretaceous if you are into the Jurassic world universe. And also, if you want something a little bit more grown up, there is something on Netflix. I think it's like Disenchantment or something along those lines. But
Yes, it's Disenchantment.
Okay. It's the Simpsons creators, right?
Yeah, who also did Futurama.
Which is also the Futurama creators.
Correct, yes.
Okay. Very exciting. I didn't know Futurama was coming back, so that's exciting. But that's a really good one, too. There's like four seasons of both of those shows.
Cool.
Andrew?
Well, Zoo Hair said at the top, have a top three ready, so I have four ready, as is my usual. So I'll gun through these quick. I took the anime route, if you're looking for more anime in your life. And the reason I have four, I will always recommend my number one anime is Hunter x Hunter. That's very long, though, so if you're not looking to dig yourself in, the top three are short ones that you could do pretty easily. Way of the House Husband on Netflix, I've mentioned it before. It's a small slice of life. Like, you could binge this in a couple hours. There's not a lot going on there. One Punch Man is a super fun one.
Good call.
That I believe there's only one season.
Two
seasons now. Sorry. But they're both very short, so yeah, you could do that within your time period, and it's just fun and off the walls. And from the same creators, Mob Psycho 100. There's two seasons of that as well. It's a super zany, like fighting demons but dry humor kind of thing. I absolutely love it. We're getting a third season this year, so if you also want to get ready for that, I think it's in December. You can catch up on that. So yeah, there's my three hits plus gotta recommend the big one.
I'm going to throw in an anime then, and that will bring me up to three. My favorite anime is Fairy Tail.
Nice.
Oh, yes. Good one.
I know friend of the show, Brian V. Klein, is on the same page with you there.
Yeah. We've talked about it. Yeah. Yeah. But that's my favorite anime. So I'm up to three.
Nice.
One Punch Man is the only thing I can add my stamp of approval on. I just finished watching season one again because the comedy on that is just glorious.
I know what Zuhair is going to say.
This is also a way to drop some news. The trailer for My Hero Academia season 6 dropped today. There's no subtitles to it, so it just looks really cool. Oh, but now's a better time than ever to watch the 5 seasons because there's no spoiler arcs, no filler arcs, just a couple filler episodes here and there that are still really good. The show is phenomenal. If you love anime, if you love superheroes, just everything about it is wonderful. You'll really like it. So now's a great time to binge. In terms of quickness, Spy Family, hilarious, great anime. Only 11 or 12 episodes are out right now. It's coming out every Saturday afternoon, so that'll definitely give you a good giggle. And then also airing on a weekly basis on season 3 right now is Duncanville, which is
nice.
Just funny. It's just funny. It's like the Disenchantment of Futurama type of humor, you know, very Family Guy like. And we had one of the lead editors do an interview with us about that show and how excited she was for season 3, and it's lived up to her hype of just how hilarious it is. So those are my 3 instant ones, and I hope you feel better, and I hope you enjoy all this content.
Yes, yeah. And good luck with everything. Yeah.
And I will say, I will double Zuhair's Spy X Family, because I would have said that, but I was saving it for him.
Yeah.
And also, if you do listen to this one first and you're looking for our recommendations, go listen to those interviews because we had a lot of fun. If that was during your hiatus, Nina Helene Hurton was the one Zuhair just mentioned. And I'm not saying this just to listen to more of us. That interview was just so much fun to get to listen, not to the three of us talk, because really, I think she talked for about an hour of the hour and 15 minute interview just about her life story. So
yeah,
go give that a listen for her sake, because she was a fantastic guest to have on to give you a little bit more things to do in your downtime.
Yeah, all excellent suggestions. And I didn't get to appear on as much of that interview as I wanted, but I listened back to it just editing it, and it was a really, really interesting story and conversation. I'll just throw my last couple of suggestions out there to get caught up. I'm getting kind of confused. I know you've written in the past, I think you watched either Vox Machina or Arcane. I can't remember which one exactly, but if you haven't watched Arcane, definitely recommend Arcane. It was recommended to us so much on this show, and when I took the plunge and watched it, I definitely did not regret it. It's such a unique animation style. You don't need to have any prior knowledge to League of Legends. It's just got great characters, great action, and a really riveting story. And then I'll also throw out there, knowing that you like Attack on Titan, I think that was the first show that you started writing in for us, so I know you can handle a little bit of that more mature content, but Love, Death, and Robots on Netflix. They've got 3 volumes so far. It's an anthology series kind of akin to Black Mirror or The Twilight Zone, but in an animation format. And I wasn't like hospitalized, but I was bedridden for about 4 hours while I was giving blood. They were collecting white blood cells from me, and I couldn't move my arm for about 4 hours. And I just like honed in on Love, Death, and Robots, and like it didn't bug me at all. The stories were so engaging. The animation is so unique and different styles and funny stories, heartbreaking stories, some horror stories. It's just really, really good stuff. And then got to throw one more in there real quick. If you have HBO Max, check out Primal. It's from Gindy Tartakovsky, who did Samurai Jack and Dexter's Lab. It's got very little dialogue, and it's all about this like caveman and his pet dinosaur and the adventures they go on. And it's just got this great atmospheric tone, and I always recommend it.
I do have to say Vox Machina is just damn near a perfect show right now.
Sweet.
5 episodes in, and
it's really good.
Everything about it is so good.
And we've teased it before. That's being pushed back for some possible logistical reasons, but we will cover that at some point.
Indeed. Indeed.
I don't think we put up a single live action thing, did we?
I wasn't sure if
I thought the point was not to.
Yeah. 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 This is the animation deliberation.
She wrote into us.
Yeah. Yeah. She knew what she was getting. Okay. I think we've reached the point of the show where we will let the people know what we have going on. So Sarah Day, as our guest, what would you like to let the people know that you've got going on elsewhere?
Sure. So it's too late to sign up officially, but you can still play along. Zuhair and I actually created Fantasy Heroes, which is essentially taking fantasy football and applying it to the MCU. We are guesting on the Stranded Panda MCU podcast every time a new movie or show is released to kind of update the points, but it is a lot of fun. And you definitely want to start following us so you can play next year.
Sweet. Yeah, thank you for all your effort there. We get to thank Zuhair regularly, but we don't see you as often. So thank you for
more everything effort than I do anyways.
All right, well, Zuhair, why don't you go ahead and go next? Let the people know what's going on in your corner.
Yeah, so outside of this, I will be on the MCU cast weekly with Matthew Carroll and Jeff Randall to talk about Ms. Marvel. So every Wednesday at 10 p.m., we will be on Twitch and then available wherever you find your podcast. Also, we had an interview with Anjali Bimani, who is an actress that is on Ms. Marvel, and she was also known for Critical Role. She's been in Modern Family, one of the voices for Vox Machina, so super fun interview, a lot of cultural talk and just how the system works in Marvel and the whole process, just how amazing all of it is. So do check that out.
Yeah. And that's 10 p.m. Eastern, correct? Because
correct.
Okay. Because I've looked at the analytics and I believe most of our listeners are actually based in California. So as much as this show is dominated by the East Coast, there are other time zones out there.
Funniest fact, though, if you look at our analytics, the two biggest cities by listener is my city and Zuhair City.
Really?
So California has the most overall people, but Zu and I have just, I think, bugged enough of our friends to actually listen.
I'll have to look at that.
None of them told me they listen.
I thought San Francisco. I thought it was Rochester or Buffalo and then San Francisco, but I could be wrong.
I could have been looking at a much smaller sample size or something along those lines.
But. Yeah. All right, Andrew, why don't you let the people know about what you've got going on and plug those social medias as you always do such a great job with.
Yeah, it's the same as always, so I'm going to keep it simple. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Facebook and Instagram, Animation Deliberation, Twitter, Animation Delib 1. And the big thing that I'm just going to plug today is it's an awesome day right now. Happy Father's Day to all of the fathers out there on the day of recording. Juneteenth is also today. Amazing day to celebrate the emancipation and the freedom of, you know, what America can give us, as well as it is still Pride Month because it is June. So also happy Pride. I'm saying all of this because I put a bunch of stuff on our story in the past day just to kind of celebrate people from all walks of life and kind of give a thank you. So I'll give another one now as we're closing out.
It's just awesome. A holiday gauntlet today.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah, and here in California, it's a three-day weekend, so wonderful reason to celebrate fathers. I'm blessed to have a father in my life that has been pretty supportive of me in all my endeavors. And yeah, Juneteenth, it's great that that's finally being recognized on a federal level. And I was kind of ignorant to that even being a holiday until the last couple of years. It was actually the show Atlanta that kind of made me aware of Juneteenth for the first time, but it's just great to see how that knowledge has spread. Apart from that, I'll just again mention that Bingers Assemble just completed their coverage of the Jurassic Park films. It was a lot of fun to go back and revisit all of those films in preparation for Jurassic World Dominion, and we had some thoughts on that. And then I have appeared on the last couple of episodes of PandaVision covering the third season of The Boys. I don't know if I'll be a mainstay on that show, but anytime they invite me back, I'm happy to discuss one of my favorite shows currently airing. And I believe that's it. So my name is J. Scotty St. Clair, and thanks again for tuning in. That's TOONIN.
Stay whelmed.
And beyond. Muscle, muscle.
Nice.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Animation Deliberation Podcast, a proud member of the Stranded Panda Network. If you would like to contact us, you can email animationdeliberationpodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at @animationdelib1. For this and other great shows, you can visit strandedpanda.com or join the great community that is the Stranded Panda Chat Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/svchat. Tune in next time, and remember, stay whelmed.